Gareth's gone, but Hannah's here. I'm talking about storms, of course. Big gusts of wind that provide managers with a ready excuse. When their teams fail, blame it on the gale. The type of weather not former Wimbledon frontman Marcus nor Dwight of West Bromwich by way of Newcastle. It would take more than inclement conditions to postpone this weekly fixture, though. We're in a studio for one thing. The weather's largely irrelevant. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes, this is the Totally Football League Show. Welcome once again to our weekly roundup of all things EFL. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, once again playing the role of not-so-super sub. Alongside me today, two chaps who are always bright and breezy. No more meteorological metaphors, I promise. First, star of stage and screen. Well, screen. Well, he was on telly for a bit the other night. Hello, Sam Parkin.
Good morning.
How's your hipster niece?
She's doing well, yeah. First football training session on Saturday morning. And she sported a Fiorentina shirt, a vintage Fiorentina shirt.
So with Chiesa on the back?
Chiesa on the back, yeah. Yeah, not Batistuta, but she did look quite like Batistuta with her flowing locks. But supposedly she really enjoyed it. She's going to be back next week. Hopefully stick her in a Borussia Dortmund away shirt.
Next, he was once a winger, now he's a radio broadcaster, a tactics blogger, a podcaster par excellence. It's Mr. Fingers in Pies, Adrian Clark.
Yeah, that's me. Great jumper, by the way. Enjoyed that jumper under the jacket on Sky Sports. Nice look.
I was surprised. I thought we were going to go open neck shirt and suit, but it was much more casual than that.
Under the bright lights. I thought that was a bold move. And by the way, you missed off my stage appearance as Franz the Butler in Sound of Music.
Just okay, saying. Tell us more.
There's not much more to say, but it happened.
Just the once.
And I was a solid 6 out of 10.
All right, well, can't ask more than that in your debut, I suppose, can you? No Joe Crilly today. He was last seen wandering around the Wigan area muttering something about 8-point deficits. Before we get to the EFL action, let's have a quick chat about how our championship representatives got on in the FA Cup quarterfinals. Millwall 2-2 Brighton, but Brighton win 5-4 on penalties. Millwall architects of their own downfall. 2-0 up with 2 minutes of normal time remaining. Then a horrible error from keeper David Martin for 2-2. Sammy had the chance to redeem himself in the penalty shootout. But, I mean, before we got to that, Shane Ferguson sent off in the last minute of extra time. Neil Harris called him his best penalty taker. They really did shoot themselves in the foot in this game.
Yeah, they did. I went into it thinking, surely Millwall can't do it again, given how great their form has been against Premier League teams. But, you know, 2-0 up, the elements were, you know, just horrendous, weren't they? The swirling wind and rain. But yeah, Martin, I mean, coming in for this one, just making a horrendous error. Had a possibility to save, I think it was Stevens penalty, down to his right, which he got fingertips on, but just wasn't to be for Millwall. So credit Brighton for going there and being able to achieve something that a lot of Premier League clubs have not.
And as for the other quarterfinal, Adrian, involved in an EFL club, last week the Bozo hosting this pod said Swansea had no chance, they'd lose 4-1. They were brilliant, certainly for 60 minutes of the game before kind of the inevitable happened. This might be a bit of a reactionary hot take, but has VAR largely discredited the FA Cup this season?
Yeah, it ruined the weekend, didn't it? I think that we must never allow this to happen again. I think that the powers that be have to come out and explain this, because I understand that you have to draw a line in the sand. You can't have VAR at every single game from the first round onwards. I get that. But to only limit it to Premier League grounds is nonsense, because most Championship grounds are fantastic. They've got the facilities to do it. I just think that every match that was televised, given the cost of getting all the cameras in for TV coverage, that had to be the line in the sand, didn't it? And I feel incredibly sorry for Swansea, because if VAR had been in place, I think that they would have been in the semi-final. I really do. Against Brighton. So I thought it was ridiculous, and it must never happen again.
Even more inexcusable, Sam, when you think that Swansea didn't have it. The Liberty Stadium was a Premier League ground last season. Mm. Molyneux did have it. That was a Championship ground last season. Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, definitely. And the warning sign was there from the previous round, not at Swansea, but at Millwall. Remember the farcical scenes from the Everton game? So we had a manager looking up at the screen telling his PA man to turn off the screen. So it was really contentious during the previous round. It had to be in play for these games. I thought the penalty was probably just about right on Sterling. I don't know, first viewing it looked like... Did he? Yeah, I think it was one of those that just deflected. I don't know, I thought that was maybe the right call, but obviously Aguero was clearly offside. But, you know, the Championship and Swansea, Graham Potter, they leave with a lot of credit because of, as we've been saying
what
on this
goal,
show.
The second goal, yeah. All the way from the goalkeeper, wasn't it? And, yeah. And that, I think that shows the promise that Swansea have got. Watch them go next season, by the way. I think with this young team, but a little bit more financial back, and I think Swansea can have a good season.
Yeah, big pat on the back to Bersant Salina for having gone viral in the week with that rotten penalty at West Brom for making the news for the right reasons. After that bit of moonlighting, it's back to the league stuff.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
As ever, we'll kick off with the Championship, and oh my, it's all very exciting at the top. With Sheffield United beating Leeds at Elland Road, they're now front runners to go up with Norwich, who won at Rotherham. That win for the Blades ensured that they will at least make the playoffs. Speaking of, Villa, Preston and Sheffield Wednesday all won at the weekend to ensure the race to the finish remains too close to call. Down at the bottom, a stonking 5-2 win for Wigan over Bolton gave the hosts a 3-point buffer between themselves and trouble and pushed Bolton closer to the drop, whilst Ipswich played out their 6-1-1 draw in 7 matches, much to the displeasure of me. But it's the Yorkshire first. Leeds 0, Sheffield United 1. Either of you two been like me and guilty in underestimating Sheffield United as genuine automatic promotion?
Definitely, hands up. I've said it for a few months that I felt that Leeds and Norwich were the best two teams. I didn't mean that in a disparaging way to the Blades. I just felt that they was a slight cut above, but clearly not. And Sheffield United's run has been terrific. Obviously, the basis of it has been this wonderful clean sheet record. And Wilder, I mean, he put himself out there, didn't he, Sam, in this game by putting Chris Basham into central midfield. I know it's not the first time that's happened, but to do it in a big game like this was a bold tactical call, one that looked like not paying off.
Said he nearly took him off after 20
well,
minutes, didn't he?
Battered them, didn't they? I don't think Leeds should beat themselves up too much about their own performance. It was great resilience from Sheffield United, and they took that one chance, great goal, wasn't it? Classic sort of counter from them. And we have to take them very seriously now.
Yeah, he probably got something from that structure that he set up that he wasn't anticipating. He probably thought they were going to be defensively sound in the first half. But what he got was Basham joining in with the two strikers, got in the first half and obviously scored the goal. I think he slips for the goal.
Definitely slipped,
it's the weirdest finish ever. The commentator, I think, said he steered it in the far post, which he did, but I think it helped that his kind of standing foot collided almost at the same
time.
Didn't
they sound to me that he tackled it into the corner?
Yeah, Billy Sharp did.
That was probably the best description.
Yeah, no, it was a strange goal, but I think Chris Wilder, they were a little bit high in the first half and Leeds United got in behind them on a number of occasions and were able to get chances but not work the goalkeeper, which I think was the criticism for Leeds on the day. In the second half, I think Sheffield United were more compact, obviously just tweaked one or two things at half time and saw it out quite comfortably. A testing day for Leeds, given Janssen's going to be out now, I think, for 3 weeks. And I've noticed Kemar Roof doing a bit of telly at the weekend. They need him back. I think Bamford's done well, but I think the mobility that Roof gives them in this system will probably be the preferred option moving forward.
The stats on Sheffield United, unbeaten in 10, 1-7, including each of the last three, 10.5 hours of football without conceding a goal. But as you say, Sam, Leeds, slightly worrying times, now lost at home to Norwich and Sheffield United, 3 of their next 4, away to Birmingham and Preston, then home to Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, yikes.
Have you done this because I've done a sophisticated tallying up of the points before we came into the studio?
Oh, you've done one of those.
Yeah, I've done a tally.
This is not with the help of a website that preloads it
for
you.
This is me,
mate.
There's no XG, there's nothing here.
You used a highlighter as well, haven't you?
High tech, hasn't he, this week?
Sheffield United are going up in second, according to my maths.
Explain.
Well, that's it.
You've got to show you're working.
No, I just looked at the results. I think Sheffield United are going to get 17 more points, and I think Leeds are going to get 15 more points. There you go.
Yeah, well, yeah, the pressure is on, isn't it? And you wonder. I wouldn't be too down on Leeds. Obviously, Liam Cooper had a bit of a bad day. Losing Janssen's a blow. But with Roof coming back and Bamford, a bit of competition there. I agree completely with Sam. I think Roof sets the tone. He's just able to press and move around that bit sharper at the top end of the pitch. So he might actually be the lift that they need for that running. I did think Tyler Roberts played pretty well. I was impressed with him and the positions he got into were great. It was just he just forgot his shooting boots.
The big talking point, obviously, for people like me at this game was that we finished with an outfield player in goal. One or both of you two must have an anecdote about this from your playing days. You fancied yourself a bit as a keeper, didn't you, Sam?
No. Never.
You're tall enough for it.
Yeah, no, I can only dive one way. I can only dive one way.
I
can only dive to the right.
I can only dive to my left. So between us, we'd make a good keeper.
I'm worldy to my right. I'm unbelievable. But to my left, it's just you just got to like hope you get your leg on it or something.
Elsewhere in Yorkshire, Rotherham 1, Norwich 2. Norwich 6 wins on the spin, 5 points clear of third place. Ben Godfrey gets the winner here. He spent last season on loan at Shrewsbury. Another credit in the bank for Daniel Farker for bringing him back and making him a key player. Norwich aren't going to blow this from here, are they?
I don't think so, no. No, I'm a big champion of Norwich's prospects. It was great again from them. Lovely little clip round the corner from Pookie for one goal. And the set piece was a good finish from Godfrey. Escaped to Jai, who'd scored for Rotherham. What I thought stood out in this game was a little bit of their game management. They were very savvy, and I know that they irked the locals by sort of slowing the game down. I think the home fans were getting wound up by them breaking up play, etc., once they got themselves in front. And this was a classic from Daniel Farker, who afterwards, I didn't even notice his interview. I know that he speaks fast anyway, but it felt like he was speaking in times two speed. He's struggling to contain his excitement, I don't think, at the moment, Daniel Farker. But what he did, he saved all his subs for injury time. So he basically spent the whole of injury time bringing on one sub after another, which I just thought was quite smart. Really.
It's a great way to troll the whole home
support. It's a massive
well,
way to troll the fans and to just kill the momentum that Rotherham might have had towards the end. So, yeah, this Norwich team are not just good in terms of whether they play. They're actually pretty smart and a little bit cynical, dare I say, at times.
Sam, Rotherham, we've given them a lot of praise for their team spirit and for the fact that we like the manager, but if we get realistic, 6 of their last 8 against teams going for the playoffs, can you actually make a case for them to stay up?
Well, it's going to be difficult, but I thought they left Saturday's game with a lot of credit. Paul Warne in tears in the dressing room. He spoke about he's a lifelong Norwich fan, so he said he kind of spoke to the players before they went out there, wanted to do it for him and his loved ones and leave everything out on the pitch. No, I don't think you can write them off because they're in more or less every game and they were patched up at the weekend as well. Volks was missing his second game due to his suspension. Robertson's probably been their best defender as well. He was out. Matic was out at left back as well. So they had a few players that had to fill in. I think they left with a lot of credit after a good performance pushing the league leaders all the way to the death. So no, I think they've got a great opportunity still.
Well, we'll see if they can do it. To the playoffs, Aston Villa 3, Middlesbrough 0. What's Dean Smith got so right all of a sudden? Is it just that they've turned draws into wins? Is it that they're spreading the goals around? Abraham's dried up a bit, 1-7, but yeah. McGinn and others are taking over. Everything's going right for them.
I think there's a part in everything you said there. I think defensively, with something we were speaking about months ago, Mings and House, is it you, how you pronounce it, Courtney House? One goal they've conceded in the last 4 games since they've been a pairing. Grealish has been an enormous influence in the last few matches. And McGinn as well. I think when those two are in the side, and they were missing, I think, prior to this little run, one or the other, if Grealish doesn't get you, John McGinn will. He's 3-2 now. Fantastic finish again at the weekend. And they've got a great opportunity. Middlesbrough just sat in. You know, I think it was almost a back six at times with Obi Mikel as well, just shielding the back five as it was and didn't show any real intent. And it could have been worse by all accounts. At half time, it could have been worse. I think that was the one criticism from Dean Smith that they didn't, you know, add to the 3 goals. But Adrian's been talking them up. I didn't see it. Derby, Birmingham, Forest, now Middlesbrough. That's the last 4 games. That's 4 games you could have envisaged them losing a couple of.
Yeah, no, I've just been really impressed by Villa. I think their midfield is the key here. I completely agree about the young centre-halves, Mings and Hawes.
You saw them live last week.
Yeah, I saw them at City Ground. And they, sorry to say it, Matt, but they wiped the floor with Forest. I'm sure you saw the game. They controlled the engine room. And I looked at the team before the game and I thought, well, this is pretty bold. You've got Hourihane, McGinn and Grealish. And I know that Hourihane can be that defensive guy, but I always think he's best actually as a box-to-box. So I thought, oh, this is a bit dodgy, but they absolutely bossed it. They're just 3 good footballers. And what I love about Smith is that he saw that and thought, well, that was good, but I'm going to bring in Whelan for this one. I'm just going to switch it around. So he's got four top players for 3 positions at the moment, and whichever combo he selects, it seems to be clicking, and the wide guys have got power and pace, haven't they? El Ghazi and Green. So no, Villa on that roll. Borough just was like the playoffs last year. They didn't have the belief to go to one of the big boys and attack it. They just went there and tried to keep the score down. And for that reason, Middlesbrough I'm sorry, but they're not good enough for the Premier League, and I don't think they will be going up no matter what happens.
Tony Pulis says there's a flatness around the club since the defeat against Preston. Is El Capo, as I call him, the man to turn flat into bouncy? Like, you know, all right, there's a flatness around the club. We're doing a double session on defending today.
Well, no, Pulis's track record has to be respected. So let's not hammer him, but I just don't see them being brave enough, bold enough. This is a division where you need to go out and win games. I don't think draws are good enough, really, in this particular race for promotion. So, yeah, I just see them being a bit too cautious. And for that reason, I think they'll probably miss out on the playoffs now.
Are West Brom making us eat our words a little bit, Sam? 1-0 win for them at Brentford at the weekend. That's 2-2 for Jimmy Shan as caretaker. We were expecting Jokanović to be in position, or somebody to be in position by this time, but they seem to be rolling along all right with the caretaker.
Not my words, young man, not my words. They are, indeed. I thought it could have gone either way at the weekend. Sam Johnson, I don't think, has been at the level that he was last season for them in goal, but he had a really big 90 minutes and made a number of good saves, in particular from Benrahma, who's obviously been, you know, flavour of the month for Brentford. And the young lad getting an opportunity, Edwards, and obviously the manager knows him well, I think, since he was 8-9 years old, in from the start, and a brilliant individual goal. So, no, they've seemed to have turned a little bit of a corner, but away from home has not been the problem. Let's see how they get on, if they have got a caretaker in charge in the next couple of home games.
As for Brentford, Thomas Frank said the wind didn't help. All right, Jürgen. Producer Abby got some odds from William Hill on the next West Bromwich Albion manager. It's not as clear-cut as we thought this time last week.
No, so the odds that they've got up are for the manager on the first day of the 2019-2020 season. And as expected, it's Slavisa Jokanović who is favourite, but he's joint favourite with Alex Neil. They're both 2-1 to be in charge come the start of next season. Jimmy Shan is the third favourite at 6-1. Honourable mention to David Moyes at 12-1.
Clinging on, good old Moyesy. You mentioned Alex Neil, Abby. Preston 1, Birmingham 0. First thing that pops into my head watching these highlights and the subsequent post-match interviews, I think the answer to this question is no. Is there a scarier manager in the EFL than Alex Neil? He looks like he'd just rip you apart.
You should have tried playing against him. Bloody hell.
Really?
Nah, he was a tough little midfielder. Nice footballer, though. He was like the little pivot for Hamilton for a number of years. Good little player. They're unbelievable. I didn't know that they were unbeaten since New Year's Day.
12 unbeaten.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I spoke last week about the necessity for them to start taking maximum points at Deepdale, and they did that in a really ugly game, by all accounts. I think Birmingham actually had the better chances. And I wanted to talk about Declan Rudd because he made that horrific mistake at St Andrews December the 1st when he left Kiftan Beld's pass, essentially, just run through his legs. Yeah, he was brilliant at the weekend, made a couple of big saves, and he's playing, you know, like a goalkeeper with real confidence again at the moment. So a great turnaround for him. I think Preston probably not at their best because Gallagher was out, and your man Brown, who's been Adrian's favourite this season. Mine's still Herbie Kane. So yeah, missing two big players, got over the line. Probably a point may have been the fair result there.
That was you who got the Herbie Kane pre-match analysis into the Doncaster game, wasn't it? I saw
indeed
that.
Indeed it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't very good, poor Herbie. We'll come on to that.
Alex Neil, this is the kind of thing that makes me think he's quite a scary man. We only go under the radar because nobody cares about Preston. Problem with people saying you're going under the radar is when they're saying that, inevitably you're getting above the radar. So the pressure changes a little bit, but they weren't expected to be challenging.
No, so. They weren't. No. So whatever happens, I think, will be a bit of a bonus. But they've put themselves in the running, haven't they? I mean, form-wise, they're miles better than your Bristol Cities and your Derbys and your Boroughs. So we'll watch this space. Yeah, I think the centre-halves have been great, haven't they? The two young lads at the back. But they've got a tough run. So they've got Reading away next, which I would imagine they might win. But then they've got the top three. They've got Sheffield United, Leeds and West Brom. So Preston, either for themselves or for the division as a whole, will have a massive impact over the coming weeks. And they're in the right place to have a positive one.
We're writing Birmingham off now, 7 points off the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry, Birmingham. Let's go to Sheffield Wednesday 4, Blackburn 2. Steve Bruce said, "We took our chances at the right time. Our first real attack was scored and that calmed everybody down a bit. Just at the right times we've scored again. Should have been more comfortable than it turned out to be." Are you going to revise your opinion of him, Sam? You said he was a busted flush.
Yeah, well, I said that, and then I wrote...
Hasn't lost a game since he took over.
Yeah, then I wrote an article for the Football League paper about 3 weeks later saying, like, how well he'd done in his opening spell. So I just, like, softened it.
No, more faces in the Town Hall Club.
No, you're right, I've embarrassed myself here, haven't I? Yeah, he's done well, hasn't he? 10 games unbeaten. I thought the transfer activity was very good. Iorfa's obviously got a goal and assist at the weekend. He's been very good. Aarons as well from Newcastle. The other chap's name from Newcastle, name escapes me, but he wasn't available at the weekend. But three players who have had a big impact. 4-4-2, high energy, and in a game when the conditions again were very poor, the one player with that little bit of panache, Barry Bannon, who, yes, can keep the ball, but now they've got that real option to go long into Fletcher or even Nuhu, who came on and got himself a goal. So looking very strong in all departments. It's the fixtures again. I think Preston have got difficult ones. Sheffield Wednesday, likewise. I think they play, I think it's 5 of the last 8 is against top 10 sides. So
but you kind of want that, though, don't you? Because you can take points off them.
No, you don't want it. They're better teams, aren't they?
You want to play QPR and Hull.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. Well done, Brucey. Yeah, I think they might just miss out. That's my hunch. Just based on maybe the depth of the quality in the squad. I mean, I don't know if I'm being too harsh. I know that they've got the two big guys in Fletcher and Nuhu. Fletcher's injured now. Hutchison, I think, is out as well. Now he picked up an injury. So you wonder if they begin to add up those injuries, they might struggle. But it's been brilliant.
Villa, Forest, Leeds, Norwich, Bristol City and Preston coming up for Sheffield Wednesday. So we'll find out one way or the other. In terms of Blackburn, try and make some sense of this for me, Sam. This was Tony Mowbray's post-match quote. It's very easy for people to say it's been terrible, but I know for a fact it hasn't been terrible. The results have been terrible, of course, but the team hasn't. There's been practically no drop-off, I would suggest.
Well, there has been, hasn't there? Probably them and QPR have been, the toughest last couple of months. 7 defeats in 9 now for Blackburn. And we saw Brentford go to Sheffield Wednesday a few weeks ago and struggle with the intensity that Steve Bruce's side is playing at. And I think Blackburn do play nice football and they can, you know, certainly get their foot on the ball and probably had as much, if not more, possession than Wednesday. But yeah. You have to have that clinical edge as well, and that was lacking for them at the weekend. Although they did get a couple of goals, I suppose, defensively. Question marks about them at the weekend.
Odds-wise then, Abby, what's going on with the playoff chasers? Who are the favourites now to finish in the top six?
I quite like it if Steve Bruce came back and did the odds. That was beautiful. Favourites are still Middlesbrough. They are 2-5. Then it's Villa 11-10 and Derby 5-2. Sheffield Wednesday, we've just been talking about them, are 16-1 on. And of course, we can't let this go, Matt, without talking about Forest, 10-1.
Keep your money in your pocket, I would suggest there. Villa still odds against, Adrian. 11-10, I'm seeing.
Yeah, I would be sorely tempted by that, I have to say. I just got a feeling that they'll stick around now because they've found themselves at the back without the ball. Because of all the quality in attack, Abraham, like you say, is not in great form. But actually, you say he's not in great form. I thought he was really good against Forest. What he did, he produced a selfless performance. And look, if he does that every week and the others around him chip in with the goals, then Villa are going to be just fine. So, yeah, there's an air of confidence about them. I'd now be very surprised if Villa blew it.
By the way, a Steel City Derby playoff final, you can get 150-1 on that. I was really wanting that to happen and I've just remembered the game that they played the other week and now I really don't want that to happen. Here's an easy riddle, dear listener. What comes after Champ but before two? Why, it's our old friend League One, of course. That's where we're headed next. And you won't believe what happened at Oxford.
Make this an Every Saturday Super with the Super Saturday Reloaded coupon from William Hill. Available in all William Hill branches across the UK. With more prizes on offer than ever before, your new Super Saturday competitions offer you the chance to win a share of £1 million and some additional extra goodies specific to your region. All you have to do is select the number of goals, corners and cards across 3 selected football matches. Super Saturday football and racing competitions are free to enter when you bet £10 at your local William Hill. T's and C's apply. You can find out more at williamhill.com. And remember, when the fun stops, stop.
Whilst the Championship has playoff drama aplenty, it's all about the battle to beat the drop in League One. Just 2 points separate 13th to 21st. That's Bristol Rovers down to Walsall. But we can only begin with the farcical ending at the Kassam, involving two teams desperately hoping to make their way out of the relegation fight. Oxford 1, Bradford 0. Who wants to have a go at explaining what happened here?
Well, it was a disgrace, first and foremost. I think Andy Davis is a referee that's reffed mainly in the Championship this season.
Seventh season in the EFL. Yeah. Get the feeling he might get the weekend off this weekend.
My take on this is actually pretty simple. I was thinking about it because he completely lost the plot, didn't he? And lost control of his emotions, of his decision-making, to go to one linesman and then to go to make a decision, then to go to other linesmen to change my mind. I have never seen that happen. I think he needs to have more than a week off. I think a month off. I think if the people who are in charge of the referees in this country want to raise standards and provide competition, when refs have bad days, and I know that they will all make mistakes, of course we will, but I think when the errors are as serious as this, and let's get this right, this is about battle of survival between Oxford and Bradford. Those points matter massively. When you make an error as big as that, I do think that some kind of suspension should come in, and I've got no qualms saying that. I know it sounds draconian, but there has to be almost a punishment mechanism in place for referees that lose it, and he lost it.
Just in case you haven't seen it, Bradford want a stoppage time penalty / corner, but the ball is out for a goal kick, so the referee rules. Oxford take this. Couldn't really tell on the highlights, but it looked as though the ball hadn't left the penalty area before the Oxford player got hold of it. Hits it up the field. Jamie Mackey scores. Ref has a chat with his assistant, indicates that he's ruling the goal out and that the goal kick has to be taken again. Then he speaks to his other assistant and gives the goal. Gary Bowyer, there are so many things that are wrong in allowing the goal to stand. I mean, he did well, actually, to react in a reasonably measured way to what was a pretty outrageous piece of officiating.
I mean, I don't work for the FA and I'm not a referee, but obviously the commotion is wrong, which is caused by the referee's inability to make a quick decision. I mean, having looked back at all the incidents during that 30 seconds a minute, you know, I can't really make my mind up. I think the ball, on the camera, the ball looks like it might have gone out of the area. It seems to be some suggestion that if the players in the 18-yard box aren't interfering with play, it doesn't matter. The goalkeeper can roll it out and they can play. And the actual tackle, I think it's a really bad miss from the Bradford player. Yeah, there's contact afterwards, which you can argue might be a penalty. But if you look at the reaction of the Bradford players, it's almost hands on heads. We've just missed a sitter. So I don't think the referee might have got it right in terms of Jamie Mackey's goal being allowed.
Yeah.
But the commotion, 6 minutes it took. 6 minutes. And for both managers and benches to get involved, you can't have that.
No. And the fact that he went to the linesman in the wrong order as well. So he went to the correct linesman, the first one, the one that was closest to the area where the player might have touched it.
What does the bloke 50 yards down the pitch?
What's he got to offer, and why is he chipping in? It was the most calamitous piece of refereeing I think I've ever seen.
And I guess we ought to give the assistant who was nearest the incident, he needs to take some stick as well, because he must have said, I don't know. Well, what?
If you don't know,
why weren't you watching?
Yeah, if you don't know. I mean, where'd you say? If you don't know, I guess you give the goal. And that's it.
Doncaster 0, Barnsley 0. Samuel, razor-sharp punditry was the highlight of the night for many. I must confess, I switched over to Wayne's World once you'd done your pre-match bit and was pleased that I did when I saw the score. Give us a brief scouting report. You said decent first 20 minutes.
Yeah, Doncaster good for 20 minutes. I like their attacking players, and I think it became about whether Barnsley can maintain their unbelievable defensive record. It's the best in the EFL now. After Middlesbrough shipped those three at Villa, they've conceded 28. The centre-half, Pinnock, unbelievable. Just incredible. He looks a bit like he's going to fall over at times, but then he seems to just extend his leg and get a sliding challenge, and he wins every header in the box. And the keeper had a great night as well. Better in the second half. Barnsley used the ball a little bit better, a bit more direct, I felt, but the draw was the right result, and I thought it was a good point for Barnsley, given that I like Doncaster's Marquez and Wilkes and Kane. So I think both teams would have been relatively satisfied.
I have a new hero in the shape of Barnsley's Kenny Dougal, who is out for the season after trying to play on with a broken leg. He posted this on Instagram. Full trust in the lads to get us up to the champ! Exclamation mark. Don't know why I've tried to play on with a broken leg, but nobody can say I didn't try. Fair enough. John Marquis looks a bit like Gareth Bale.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I've been thinking that all season. I wasn't brave enough to say it on the telly, but yeah, he does very much so, doesn't he? He wasn't his usual self, really, on Friday. He had the best chance of the game in the first half, the double save from Davis. But, yeah, he's a top player. Him, Collins, Will Grigg, you know, the three of them, they're proven in League One level. I'm sure he'll get an opportunity in the Championship again.
Just looking at the League One playoff race, Adrian, and teams dropping points or losing this week. Peterborough, Doncaster obviously didn't get a win. Fleetwood on 52 points. Have they got an outside shot at a late run, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, they're sort of... No, we've barely spoken about them in recent times, have we, Fleetwood? It's amazing, especially given the high-profile nature of their gaffer. But he's been quietly getting on with it. They seem to be a real force at home, and then away from home, that's where it struggles. Regular listeners will realise that I'm always looking at how teams react to going to 1-0 down, and they have a truly horrendous record when they trail, which sort of would worry me. But yeah, in a season, to be honest, I think that Fleetwood are among the best of a whole bunch of teams that are mid-table. The teams, the big clubs at the top end of this division, in my opinion, are the strongest. And I'd be surprised if it's not the top five as it is, plus either the Doncaster, Coventry or Peterborough. I think Doncaster or Coventry as it stands.
You mentioned teams coming from behind there. Sunderland did that to beat Walsall 2-1 at the Stadium of Light. They're 2 points off second place, Barnsley, with a game in hand. Will Grigg with the winner, Sam. We spoke about this at the time that he joined. He could easily be the difference between playoffs and automatic for them.
Definitely, and it's in their hands now for the first time in a long while. From the start, they played with Power slightly higher up in the midfield and the two holders, Leadbitter and Catamol. So there is the option there to go with the two. But I would imagine that Jack Ross would persist with the system that he got in the success at the weekend.
Yeah, if you've got Max Power in your team, you're always going to have plenty of energy.
Yep.
More than 34,500 inside the Stadium of Light. Kudos to those Sunderland supporters. They've stuck by their team. It makes you think of Man City back in the day when they were down there. Leeds, Leicester, Wolves, Forest, Sheffield United all did. One of the Sunderland pre-match flag-waving kids, you know, as the teams come out and the players walk through, these kids waving big flags, one of them got a real dousing from the sprinkler and he just stood still. Sunderland tweeted, "A special mention needs to go to one of our flag bearers on Saturday. While the sprinkler might have caught him, he stuck to his post, braved the conditions and ensured his flag was waved." I've watched the video. He didn't carry on waving the flag. He just stood there getting drenched. So he should have either carried on waving the flag and got wet, or he should have moved to somewhere where it was dry. It was poor from him. I think it's just an excuse to go viral. I wouldn't have him back for the next home game. Portsmouth 2, Scunthorpe 0. Can one of you experts please explain to me?
It's brutal, by the way.
Well, you know, he'd been told what to do before he went out there and he hasn't done it. So anyway, Portsmouth 2, Scunthorpe 0. Adrian, can you explain Pompey's current form? Because I haven't got a clue what's going on.
Well, the Bogle's made a big difference, hasn't he? I think it's been a wonderful acquisition from Cardiff. And yeah, it was a good shot again from him that sort of sparked it. I don't know. I would say that he is a big part of their upturn. Definitely had a transformational effect. I really like the centre back, Matt Clark. I think he's had a great season. I think Pinnock is definitely a candidate for team of the season. You've probably got a couple of the Luton guys that are candidates as well. But Matt Clark would be in the shake up. He'll get some votes as well. Just a quick word for Ronan Curtis. I mean, I hope his finger's all right. I mean, did you hear what happened there? He shut his door closed in the breeze and badly severed his finger, and he's had to have it stitched up, and he's touch and go for the Checker Trade Trophy final, so we hope he's all right. You know, in his absence, Jamal Lowe stepped up. Brilliant goal, one of the goals of the weekend. So no, Pompey are back, but I think it's all about the playoffs for them now, finding momentum for that.
Well, you say it's all about the playoffs. They've got the Checker Trade Trophy final to come. A couple of tweets on this. At Pompey Dunk, will Pompey break their own attendance record for the new Wembley held from the 2008 Cup final? And will they smash Forest home and away in the Championship next season? At Pompey Dunk is my next door neighbour. He does a great job of looking after my dog Brian on occasion, but that is rude, so we're not going to answer it. Andy Hellier, round of applause for Pompey and Sunderland for selling out Wembley for the Checker Trade Trophy final. Much maligned competition, but it should be a great day. It's a big win for the EFL this, Sam, isn't it? That it's those two and not Chelsea under 21s v Swansea under 21s.
Yeah, no, it'd be brilliant atmosphere. And just as Adrian was talking about Portsmouth at the weekend, I think that semi-final win at Bury has maybe just seen them turn the corner. Good getting shot, 3-0 against a side who we've all really enjoyed watching in Bury. Been fantastic. So that was a big win for them. they're in decent shape again. Pittman was playing off the central striker, and he's not really known what to do with Pittman this season because he's a goal getter, but maybe doesn't have that mobility and athleticism that you need at the age he is, and the athleticism you need in League One. So yeah, that's a game to really look forward to and just see what impact it has on both the sides in the running, because it can have a positive effect if you win, like we saw last year, or it can have a negative effect like we saw with Shrewsbury.
It might be the first of two Wembley meetings, of course, between these two yeah. clubs. What price that, I wonder?
Don't know. Joe's not here. At the foot of League One, Shrewsbury 2, Wickham 1 at the bottom. Massive win this. Shrewsbury equalising on 87 through Omar Beckles and then winning it 90 plus 3. Ollie Norburn's pen. They're a point above the dotted line after a first win in 4. But arguably, an even bigger win at Roots Hall for Wimbledon. Dreadful mix-up between Michael Turner and Mark Oxley to allow former Southend loanee Joe Piggott to get the winner for the Dons here. Sam, Wimbledon were doomed. They're 3 points from safety all of a sudden. Wally Downs, the hero we all need, if not in a social media sense?
Yeah, I did not envisage this happening. That said, the Charlton game that I was at a few weeks ago when we got sidetracked because of my Love Actually lookalike, which wasn't anyone from Love Actually, they actually played really well in that game. But I thought it was going to be a defining moment because of the deflation. I didn't know if they were going to be able to get off from the canvas. But it's been a set system, set personnel that he's had to pick from the last few games. He's been playing a 3-5-2, Wally, and incredible result. Again, the two strikers seem to have developed a really nice partnership in Piggott and I'm going to go for Folivi, the Watford loanee.
The big man.
No, he's a little man. The little man, yeah. Who I've really enjoyed. He was great in that Charlton game, actually. He's very quick, very sharp, but invariably picks the right option on the ball as well. So those two, I felt if they could keep it tight at one end, they had some goals in them. And Piggott not celebrating because he had a loan spell at Southend. I'm not entirely sure how successful it was.
He scored the goal that got Southend promoted into League One. Yeah, I was there. I commentated on it at Wembley. He is a legend of Roots Hall, really, Joe Piggott, because of that moment. It was unreal in his 2015.
Why didn't they sign him then?
I'm sure that they would have liked to have kept him. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but he's ended up there. So no, he had a reason not to celebrate. He will be forever loved on the Essex Riviera, let me tell you. So
will Chris Powell. Is he under a bit of pressure?
Massive. I've heard that Ron Martin, the chairman, did summon Chris Powell and his staff for a chat on Sunday morning, and they've sort of knocked it around. And the upshot is that definitely willing to back him. He's really patient. Chairman is Ron Martin, so I think he will give him chance. He's just urging the fans to get behind the manager and the team. There are extenuating circumstances. Honestly, the injuries that they've lost, that they've had to key players, have just been relentless all through this season, particularly in the striker department. So I feel sorry for Powell to some degree, but they're in the mire and they've desperately got to find a way to wriggle out of it. I've looked at the running analysis. There are people that do this for you. They crunch the numbers,
Sam.
And yeah, I'll give you the details afterwards, Sam. But according to the numbers, they have the second easiest running behind Gillingham of all the teams in the bottom half because they're all in it. So there is hope for Southend, but worrying times.
Worrying in terms of the odds as well, Abby. What are William Hill saying about the teams destined to go down according to the bookmakers?
Well, as is well publicised, there's just far too many teams to go through. I believe at one point Wimbledon were 1 to 100 to go down.
Yeah.
They're now 8 to 15, so those have come in a fair bit. Southend, we've just been talking about them. They are 9 to 4 on, so they are fifth favourites to go down. But the favourites now are Bradford, 1 to 6.
Right, so that's League One done. Off to League Two next. So the big story in League Two involves one of the class of 92. Yeah, we're going to start with Paul Scholes' departure from Oldham. Joining us now is friend of the show and a man who's been following this story closely, Bill Rice of BBC Manchester. Bill, what was your immediate reaction to the news? Had there been a sense that maybe this was coming, even though he'd only been there, a month?
Well, alarm bells started ringing last week when we were told that Paul Scholes wasn't going to turn up for his weekly press conference. He was ill, or at least that's what we were told on Thursday, and so Mick Priest, his assistant, was going to do the media duties instead. That sparked a little bit of interest for us because he certainly hasn't been as animated on the touchline in recent weeks as he was in his first couple of matches in charge. And after just one win in seven games, you thought, maybe Paul Scholes just isn't taking to this management lark and isn't enjoying it as much as you thought he would. That said, I don't think anyone was too surprised to see him go for the reasons that he gave.
Yeah, so we heard this on our sister show, the Totally Football Show, yesterday from Ian Irving, who works up on your patch in the Northwest. There might be something to this that the chairman had been trying to influence not just the team selection but the tactics too then.
My understanding is when Pete Wild was charged for that caretaker spell, he was actually submitting the team a couple of days in advance for the chairman to yay or nay the actual selection. So I think he takes a very active interest in the 11 named on a Saturday. But Paul Scholes was clear right from the off in his very first press conference. He was asked this question, who picks the team? And he said he can be interested as the owner, of course he can, but I have to make the decision. And if there was any sort of suggestion that Paul Scholes couldn't make those decisions, then I think that would play a big part in why he would say, no, not for me.
Yeah, it was a point of principle, I guess, from Paul Scholes in the end that Lemsigan would have gone back on his promise. But had the team been winning, I'm not quite convinced that Paul Scholes would have walked away. Is there an element here that he's backed out of a challenge that was more difficult than it looked?
I think you make a really good point because although Paul Scholes was never going to stand for any interference in his team selection, and let's face it, he doesn't need football management, so he can have a go and walk away and he doesn't have to worry financially about how he sort of pays for his next meal. So he never needed football management as much as some people do. But it does seem like a little bit of an easy out, doesn't it? Why would Paul Scholes resign from his post by text message rather than speak to the chairman and say, hey, this isn't on, you know, let me do my job? But there was certainly that feeling after winning his opening game, didn't win any of the following six in charge, conceding late goals, which is exactly the opposite of what you'd expect from Paul Scholes from his playing days when he was sort of in a team that always scored late goals. And he looked a frustrated figure. Maybe he did start to think, you know, things at Oldham are tougher than I thought. I don't know if I'm going to be able to turn this round. And certainly it's an easy out to blame it all on the chairman.
That's Bill Rice from BBC Manchester. Sam, you ever been dumped by text?
No, I don't think so. WhatsApp, wasn't it?
I've had a few people ignore my texts.
Yeah? I mean, Paul Scholes, is it one of those, it sort of offers hope to you two, doesn't it? Great players don't make great managers. When are you doing your badges?
I took Swindon once away to Arsenal and we lost 7-0. That's been the end of my managerial career. I think, I don't know, I know Paul Scholes is an Oldham fan and all that, and he grew up in the area, but sometimes you've got to pick your fights, haven't you? And surely he knew what he was getting into. I think if you go into any club at any level, you expect a degree of professionalism. That's clearly been completely lacking at Oldham, and that's maybe just something that he cannot abide by, considering the career he had at the club he had. Yes, it's not going to be those conditions, but you expect a coach for the away games, you expect electricity, you expect the balls to be pumped up, etc, etc. So yes, it's not been particularly great, and he's probably best off out of there, is my honest take on it. Was it Pete Wild that was in charge before? Give it to him until the summer, because he knows how the place is run. And then in the summer, that's a massive appointment, or the supporters will be hoping that the owner gets out of there.
Finally on this, Adrian, it's a relief for the EFL, I reckon, because it would have given them an almighty headache if Salford had gone up in the playoffs or whatever this season and they find themselves in the same division as Oldham next year.
Yeah, I made my feelings pretty clear on that. I didn't think it was right. On reflection, it's a good job he did hang on to those shares. And you do wonder, don't you? Obviously, Salford City have got a very good manager in place at the moment, but should they ever want to make a change, that might be the way back in for Paul Scholes, mightn't it, at Salford City if they were to get into the EFL. The problem is, because he only won one of his games, you don't imagine there'd be a long list of clubs queuing up to sign Paul Scholes up as a manager now. So there's a big risk for him to walk away from that job, but he does have a strong interest and good connections, doesn't he, in a club that might be playing against Oldham next year.
Elsewhere in League Two, the big game was at I'm going to call it Field Mill. I know it's the One Call Stadium these days, but it was Field Mill when I used to go there back in the early 90s. Mansfield Town 1, Lincoln City 1. Lincoln 6 clear at the top after drawing here and Bury's game at the weekend being postponed. Mansfield 3rd on goal difference above MK. Adrian Harshall, fair to say that Conrad Logan cost Mansfield the win here.
He did. He made some saves, but yeah, it was a poor decision to come off his line. Definite penalty, the foul on Harry Anderson. Didn't look the most nimble of goalkeepers. I know that he's a former teammate of Sam's, I think, Conrad Logan. Is that correct?
Yeah. Not very nimble.
But yeah, it was. I think it's pretty a fair result. And yeah, it was a good set piece, wasn't it, from Mansfield early on, Christian Pearce. It was one of those classic ones where you crowd the keeper around the six, well, around the goal line. It's so difficult to defend if you get the delivery right, and they did. But Lincoln just got better and better as that game went on, and I think they showed their class, particularly as a defensive unit. Lincoln showed they're a tough nut to crack, and for them, it's a really good result, that is. Lincoln, the fans, big travelling support there. I think they were really pleased with the result, even though they didn't win.
Yeah, it was good to see the stadium full, home and away, essentially, for a game that was on TV. Sam, you launched a staunch defence of John Akinde's penalty technique when he missed one at Notts. He did that Hazard, wait for the keeper to go and then just dink it down the middle, cool as you like. It was a great penalty.
It was, yeah. No, he's very good at that. Definite penalty. And I think he's only missed that one. Was it at Notts County, did you say? Yeah, just that one. He's got some really important ones early part of the season as well. Maybe not got as many in open play as he would have liked, but no, he's fantastic at that. And yeah, I mean, they're almost there, aren't they? I think if they'd have won last night, it was just four more victories they needed. So they can smell it. And it's the energy of the two wide players in particular, the pace they play with, and that's where the penalty kick came from, just a flick on from Akinde. Rowe helps it on, and Anderson's so quick and so direct. He wins the penalty. Some good tackles in that game, by the way. Blood and Thunder. I can't remember the two.
A proper game.
Erdley in the second half and the wide player for Mansfield. I mean, the tackle was unbelievable. Yeah. And Erdley might... It was a bit similar to the Doncaster-Barnsley one on Friday night, which has obviously left Dougal with a broken leg. And Erdley obviously got up and walked off with his shoulders held high, but then he had to go down a few minutes later. So hopefully it's nothing serious.
Yeah, the tempo of a top-end League Two match and the quality is such a contrast to watching two struggling teams. Just the pace of the game, the way the ball is moved around. I thought in this game, even though it wasn't the prettiest, I thought the standard was pretty high.
Lincoln unbeaten in 15 seems like a matter of when, not if, they confirm their promotion. MK Dons 4th, 1-1 with Stevenage. Chucks and EK levels late on, but this is 2 points dropped rather than one gain still, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is, but I think Stevenage good value for the draw. I was there last Tuesday against Swindon, so I've seen Elias Chair up close and personal, and he's a bit of the Peter Beagries about him. Played wide left and he can deliver with his left foot, but he can come in field and hit shots as well. So as a striker, a little bit frustrating because you don't know when it's coming in. And I saw Alex Ravel give him a little bit of stick on a few occasions when he whistled a few shots into the car park last Tuesday. But he's got undoubted ability and obviously scored the opener against MK Dons. And I think Tisdale again having to change the system at half time. Jordan Houghton's such a flexible player in midfield or defence. A couple of injuries derailed him. I think Simpson was the catalyst for MK's recovery, really, off the bench, and Anike getting that equaliser. But I think a point was probably the fair result. And Stephen is not a bad side. I don't think they're not very easy on the eye, shall we say. But with Chair, he's a nice little player. And the two strikers, Guthrie's a really nice foil for Ravel. He's very mobile. He can travel with the ball. So I was impressed with some individuals within their team, but as a unit, it's quite direct.
The goal is good. Paul Farmer's good.
Yeah, that's a good save.
They got him from Lincoln, didn't they? He's played in a winning team for a while under Cowley. And yeah, I think that was a really good signing for Stevenage.
A plea to Stevenage supporters. Elias Chair, he's got to have a chant to the tune of Sit Down by James, yeah, hasn't he? That's nailed on. Forest Green Rovers 1, Carlisle United 1. The award for the worst kits in the EFL goes to these two, Illuminous Yellow versus Deep Purple. Not for me, Clive. Forest Green Rovers still in the playoffs. Carlisle a point outside. Adrian, they've actually done well to stay in touch considering how much they've struggled since John Sheridan left and Presley came in.
He did say that Stephen Presley, this was the best performance since he took over. So that was interesting. I think Carlisle were quite unlucky not to win it. And Mark Cooper did a Matt Davis Adams. He was absolutely brutal to his left back. Did you see the quote here? Yeah, he was just about as unforgiving as you. He labelled Nathan McGinley's hesitation as horrendous, which is a very strong word for a manager to say immediately after a mistake that's cost such an important goal. So, yeah, no real sympathy there for Nathan McGinley. But, yeah, look. Yeah, Carlisle, they're in the shake-up, aren't they? But so are a lot of teams.
Got to give a quick mention to Crewe 6, Crawley 1. Crewe were 1-0 down, then 4-1 up at half-time. Dave Artell, if we were a recipe, we'd be preheating the oven for the first 25 minutes. Yeovil 0, Macclesfield 2. Did we write off trademark Sol Campbell's Macclesfield a bit too soon, Sam? Yeovil making sure that it's at least a three-way fight. By the looks of things?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Now, that was massive, wasn't it, to peg them right back into trouble. And another five changes from Sol Campbell and a different system to last week. So, again, I think it's just like, what do we used to say when you were going in for the team meeting, the lottery numbers? Who's he going to pick this week?
Chuck the balls in the air.
Yeah. A little bit of that going on. But I tell you what two beautiful, beautifully crafted goals, especially the second for Harry Smith, who... Obviously, I highlighted last week at my surprise at him not being in the 11. So, yeah, a couple of lovely goals and giving themselves a chance. And it's not good there, is it?
Well, what's gone wrong there, Clarkie? 5 years ago, they were a championship team. They might well be a National League team next season.
Yeah, well, money, I think, is a big thing, isn't it? And he doesn't have a lot to play with. Obviously, got the talk of the buyout. I mean, what was the greatest experience? It's going to be the greatest fan experience in the history of world football, isn't it? When the new guys take over. Wonder whether that would be in the EFL or the National League. So yeah, I think they're in bother. The fans are not happy with Darren Way, and Way himself said that the players were hiding. They didn't want the ball, and having played in a relegation side once before, that happens. It's the tell. And if you've got players that are not calling for the ball, not moving, not wanting it, that's a big problem.
Abby, what's the weekend's results done to the relegation odds in League Two?
Well, we now have three teams that are odds on to go down. So that maths doesn't quite work, but it's Notts County, your favourites, 4-11, then Macclesfield, 2-5, and Yeovil, who are 8-11. We have been concerned about Port Vale in the past, they're 20-1, so it seems to be all right for them now.
In terms of the games coming up this weekend, League One and League Two, the focus with the Championship on international break. A couple of games that catch the eye, Adrian. AFC Wimbledon versus Gillingham. Can Wimbledon maintain the momentum?
Wow, yeah, that is huge, actually. Eves is back in form, isn't he, for Gillingham? Another trademark header for him at Kenilworth Road at the weekend. So, no, that's going to be a full-blooded affair. Definitely not one for the purists. It's not going to be pretty, but huge for both clubs.
In League Two, Sam, Notts County versus one of your old clubs, Exeter City. We haven't spoken about Exeter much in recent weeks. Obviously, every game from this point in is must win or maybe must not lose for Notts, but it's not going to be easy for them against Exeter.
No, they're very up and down, though. There's no consistency with Exeter. I did notice that Matt Jay got a wonderful goal at the weekend, and I've been wanting to talk about him all season because he made his debut in a front two alongside me, and I had the worst game in the history of professional football. Paul Tisdale spoke to me on the Monday and he said that I was getting such pelters from the Exeter supporters in the first half that he actually made a point of keeping me on and just like thought it could ruin me psychologically, but also just to maybe
it's
get
a risk
one
he was willing to take.
Yeah. Well, I was retired in 2 weeks' time anyway. But Matt, bless him, like 17 years old, playing alongside this bloke who just couldn't keep the ball. I couldn't win anything, and he ran around and he scurried around alongside me. But I'm really pleased that he's gone on and making a career for himself.
Did he put your chin up?
Sorry?
Did he put his arm around you?
No, he didn't. But I felt a little bit like I'd let him down, obviously, because it's such a big occasion for him. And if I'd have been a good target man for him on that day, he would have had a better game, naturally. So I'm really pleased that he's another one, like Liam Sercombe, Tom Nichols before, Matt Grimes. Just another really good, young, talented player out of Exeter's academy. So, yeah... they need to have a little bit of consistency if they're going to get that last position starting at Notts County the weekend.
Did you appreciate being kept on, or would you rather have come off?
No, I did. Yeah, I did. I remember I was in the kit room on the Monday morning getting my kit, and I think Steve Perryman spoke to me first, and not your day Saturday, big man, was it, or whatever. And then I spoke to Tisdale shortly after that, and he said it. I think Steve actually said Paul did well for you on Saturday, by the way. You know, just because I was a little bit, I think I was a little bit better in the second half. And it probably would have ruined me mentally if I would have withdrawn after 25 minutes, like Basham at the weekend. He's nearly done.
Oh, that's made me a bit sad. So another Totally Football League show has come to its natural conclusion. Fear not, though, we'll be back at the same time next week, looking back on the latest drama from Leagues 1 and 2 and ahead to another big weekend in the Championship. Thanks as ever for the metaphorical hand-holding, chaps. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com, and be sure to check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.